Not ready? Too bad. Head back, face forward, and hold on like you mean it.
Welcome to Review Time's Theme Park Cast, a weekly podcast where we discuss the ins and outs of attractions and theme parks from around the world. My name is Dominic Lacey, and I will be your host today as we explore the second iteration of our What's Coming to 2020 in this, hopefully, spectacular year for theme parks. But I can't do this alone, because otherwise it would be a very lonely hour to just talk to myself. So I'm bringing in the podcast host that 9 out of 10 dentists recommend. It's Review Time's co-host, Mr. Luke Carroll.
Thanks. I've always wanted to know, anytime I hear that, it's like, who is the one dentist? Who is the one dentist who doesn't recommend toothbrush or toothpaste? Surely they all recommend some form of dental hygiene, or are they the one who just wants to make a lot of money? So they're like, oh, brush your teeth with fairy floss. Eat donuts for every meal, so you have to come and get 1,000 fillings.
I remember watching an expose where it was like the Chasers War on Everything or someone like that wanted to go to dentists and like do their own study to see if 9 out of 10 dentists actually did recommend this brand.
Genuinely.
And the thing that they got out of it is how many dentists don't brush their teeth. They were like, I know, I can see your face there. You're like, what?
I forgot this was an audio medium there for a second. I was always dumbstruck facial expression.
They walked in and they're like, what is your favorite brand of toothpaste? And he's like, oh, I don't brush my teeth. And they're like, you're a dentist.
Do other doctors and medical professionals do the same? As like, you know, if you're a lung doctor, do you smoke 20 packs a day because you're like, I can fix it myself anyway? Like, what is that about?
It's probably one of those things where you and me, we're not exposed to all of these whiz-bang gadgets that they have in the dentist world. So let's say, would you rather spend the 2 minutes that it takes to brush your teeth every morning and every night? Or once a month, just get out the whiz-bang machine and just go to town in your own mouth for 5 minutes.
It does feel good after you go to the dentist and you can feel like all the holes in your teeth that you forget exist between the times that you go. So maybe he doesn't brush his teeth because he does that every single morning.
He just wants that big transformation. It's like Cinderella at the ball. It's like when the cute, nerdy girl takes off the glasses and suddenly she's hot in the movies.
This would be a very
welcome to
bad
Review Time's
rom-com.
Theme park.
The rom-com where at the end, the dentist lays himself back in the chair and cleans his own mouth with the bloody gun that's shooting water so fast it drills a hole in your head. And then he sits up from the seat and he smiles and puts that little sparkle, that little pling. And then
suddenly,
that's how you know. He's no longer
magic.
This no brushy teeth man. He is a dentist.
Like Chatham Tatum, or whatever his name is, comes
Chatham
out as magic.
Chatham Tatum.
Comes out as
that's
magic
him.
Mike.
And he's like, we're actually not allowed to say his name. We might get sued. So good old Chatting Tatum, or whatever you just said.
So this podcast is about theme parks.
It's about dentists, Chatting Tatum, and what's coming to Asian and Australian theme parks in 2021. Hopefully.
I didn't even specify that. Yeah. So we're exploring, last week we explored what was coming to American theme parks because we have a very split audience. We have like 50% are American and the other 50% are the rest of the world.
Everything else.
So it's sort of that thing where it made sense to split these up into two, because I'm sure the American population are really interested in knowing what's coming to the rest of the world. But a lot of people already know what's coming to America as well, because it's just so focused on. It's pretty much,
especially
I would say
when
America
last week
is the
Yeah,
theme
we kind
of
did focus on Disney
world.
Because there was so much coming to Disney. And chances are if people know something coming to any theme park around the world, it's going to be Disney. But this is a week. We don't get to say this very often because we generally don't kind of record our episodes and date them during the voiceover. But something has changed in this episode. If we had sat down to record it yesterday, is completely different to sitting down to record it now. Because as of a few hours ago, the first thing we're going to talk about, Super Nintendo World, which was meant to open up on the 4th of February. has been indefinitely delayed due to COVID-19 just beginning to soar in Japan, and especially Osaka, the city it is. And this is probably one of the expansions I'm most excited for around the world this year.
Well, this is a really good spot to just jump into it, because something that I was listening to another podcast, I believe it was the Disney Dish, and they were discussing Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. And one of those problems that they had with it was that essentially you open Star Wars Galaxy's Edge and you opened it in two phases. There was the initial phase that had all of the shops and then the Smuggler's Run. And then there was the second phase that had the big e-ticket attraction. But they said the problem was that people's sort of necessity to visit something new is not infinite. It's not that thing where something opens and then you're like, I have to go and visit this now. It's pretty much like, I have to visit that in the first year. And if I don't do that, then I'll be fine for the 5 years after.
Yeah.
And I believe it's a smart move to delay this, because even the urgency to go and visit things like Beauty and the Beast at Tokyo Disneyland, that urgency is starting to wear off.
I'd love to see wait times for that right now. And I think the other interesting thing with Super Nintendo World is, as we said, it's meant to open up on the 4th of February, but it's actually been in pretty much soft opening for the last month or so anyway. I haven't got concrete information of who is allowed to go in. It's some form of ticketing system before you go into the park. So we have seen guest pictures from inside the land on a couple of attractions, which they shouldn't have done, but hey, they did it anyway. So we have seen inside the land, and I'm not sure if with this delay, they're still just going to keep letting people into the land every day through this same system, or we'll essentially get to a stage where the land will reclose from its soft opening as it was going to and just not open up on the 4th of Feb. And they haven't even given a new date yet.
Is it a better idea from an operational standpoint to keep these attractions running in a soft capacity, like even if it's just for a little bit a day, or to just shutter them? Like, I guess wear and tear, it's almost a catch 22. Because it's like, you've, on one hand, if you keep on operating it until the official opening, you then get general wear and tear.
This can run for another month or two without opening in a decrepit state. Let's just say that. Theme parks are meant to be built to last.
I just mean like, you don't want it to be that thing where it's like you soft open it for 6 months and then it comes to the official opening, the ride's open for 2 weeks, and then it has to go down for maintenance. Because I believe the sort of, there's this golden zone for attractions that is like when it's been out for like more than 2 years, but it's not like over a decade old. And that's where they can sort of keep it open for as long as possible. But it's like when you get a new car and you have to service it constantly at the start, and then it sort of tapers out a lot. And then at the end, you have to service it more again to keep it running.
It's pretty much what happened with the Hagrid coaster at Universal, where it opened. And I guess it's happening as well with Rise of the Resistance up until lately, where they pretty much open not ready, would go down for days at a time, unplanned, and then got to a stage where they're like, yeah, they're pretty reliable now. But that, you know, some of those could say 6 months, a year. So who knows? They might continue to run it if they're having those operational issues. Because you have to remember, you can train as a cast member, you know, when the park's closed, when the land's closed with other cast members. But cast members are really good at following instructions and doing the same thing over and over and over again. Guests are a completely different wild card once you get those in. So it could be the thing, if they don't feel like they're ready to open on the 4th, they're just going to keep it in soft opening. And I feel the opening ceremony, the way that they've worded it, because remember how Tokyo Disney was like, we're opening it up on April, the blah, 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 whatever. And then they had to delay it because the park was closed. And then it just got to a stage where it was like, oh, by the way, it's opening next week. And it just opened with no fanfare. So I wonder if, you know, the 4th of February was meant to be this big, elaborate event. And it's actually the event that's been postponed. But the land's going to pretty much stay open anyway.
They were actually going to bring in a little Italian man called Mario. And he's just there with his thumbs up.
He was the inspiration for Mario.
This is Mario! And they're like, yeah!
I love
then they just bring out a peach and they start screaming.
Yeah! the video where Shigeru Miyamoto is taking you around and Super Nintendo Land, and he just starts it with, "Hello, I am Mario's dad." It's like, yes, thank you. And then later on, Mario and Luigi come up to him to say something, and they're like, and he's like, "Go away, dad has work to do," essentially. Which I'm like, amazing.
I get that. Like, I've worked on some fiction work in the past. I'm still working on some fiction at the moment as a little side thing that I will get around to eventually when I have more time. I like to keep myself occupied. But one of the things I always find very daunting is that you are the parent of this world and these characters and elaborating on their stories. And you almost feel a sense of guilt if you don't pursue in those, because it's like, oh, I'm the one who's killing them. Like, it's a very dark way of looking at fiction writing. The amount of stories that people must just be going around in their heads that will just never be told. But I get that whole sentiment of, I am this character's dad.
Yeah.
So,
We'll have a quick chat about Super Nintendo World, because we've talked about it not being open, but we'll have a quick chat about what it is. It is the world's first video game theme park land. There's been a few, I think, land.
Oh, no. There was Angry Birds Land at Thorpe Park.
Oh, sorry.
Shall we say the first good
video game theme park? Because I've seen pictures of that, and I'm pretty sure it was just a playground with some Angry Bird figurine shoved on top. So
to be fair, it's as if the owners of Angry Birds just ran in and like slap stickers over an existing
you
land.
You can't stop it.
I think probably the better thing to say is it's like the world's first purpose-built video game land.
And it looks,
but that gets very wordy.
And when it is called Super Nintendo World, but this first part of it, the part that's opening up, is completely themed to Mario and friends. It's got two attractions. It's got like an Omni-mover toad type ride, which is just kind of gives you a nice overview of the land. And then it's got a ride we don't know a ton about. Like, it's a Mario Kart attraction, which is meant to be a mix of screens, practical sets and effects, and AR, augmented reality. So when on the car, there's like glasses that you wear and they're see-through. And apparently it projects on those, as well as there being physical stuff in front of you. So I haven't seen any pictures from it apart from one, which was just for the very end of the ride. This could be one of the most incredible attractions in the world. Problem is, there's going to be no way to experience it except in person. How can you have a POV of something that's reliant on augmented reality glasses to do the full effect?
Similar in the way that it's like you can't experience the grandeur of Flights of Passage at Animal Kingdom without actually going on it. You can watch the video and you can get an idea of the ride. And to be honest, when I first watched a POV of Flights of Passage, which is essentially like you're flying through the world of Avatar, but it's all screens. And I was like, oh, that's very disappointing. Like, this isn't going to be a good experience. But it's that combination of the screens versus practical effects. When you go past the ocean, there's sea breeze scents like on your face. Yeah. You go into areas where it smells like different things. It's that whole 4D experience. They're just assaulting all of your senses. And it's that combined that makes that one of the best attractions in the world.
Yeah.
Whereas if you were to just watch it and look at it in its raw parts, it's like, I think this will be very similar.
This is going to, dependent on how reliant it is on the AR, I worry that people are going to get a really negative opinion on this ride from watching POVs, and it's going to be a bad thing for the brand if the ride is like, whoa, it's spectacular. If you have these AR glasses, it feels real. It looks real. Where, you know, if you're just on the ride and they're filming it and it's like, oh, there's a box. But in the AR, the box might have, you know, it might be a question mark box that you then run over and then an item pops out and stuff like that.
Mm.
But if the POV And apparently, from what I've heard, if it's also relying on the AR to give that feeling of speed. It's quite a slower moving dark ride to what we first expected.
Yeah.
But the AR gives it that feeling of whizzing past. So it'll be interesting to see. There hasn't been much leaked from it. It looks like a really interesting ride. I'm excited to eventually get the chance to get on it. It's coming to Hollywood, Orlando, Singapore, and it's opening in Japan soon. So pretty much wherever Universal is going around the world, you'll probably get the chance to experience it eventually.
And look, they're just adding it to St. Petersburg, Shanghai, the Sydney Harbour.
Wouldn't
sounds like it's
me.
Going everywhere.
Yeah, pretty. Apart from, it's not going to Beijing. And I think that's it, right? Is that, there's four Universal
parks
currently?
I think there's that weird relationship between Japan and China there. That yeah, there's a lot of Japanese products like Nintendo aren't usually released in their full form. I think it's, I haven't really looked too much into that, so I won't talk too much about it.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say, like, they have to have faith in this if it's going to all of those places.
Without ever opening. And especially if it's opening in Japan, where it's going to do well, I would say, no matter what, just because of merchandise and food.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that 100%. They're willing to put it into everywhere else without it opening in Japan, number one, and it only opening in Japan, because opening in Japan isn't going to be a huge indication of whether it would do well elsewhere in the world. There's some attractions that do it spectacularly well and get incredibly long wait times in Japan that you can look at the same attraction elsewhere in the world, and it's a completely different thing. So who knows, but I hope that that is a good amount of faith that they're putting in the brand, which is a good sign of what's to come, and not a, hey, we've paid so much money for Nintendo, how are we going to recoup our losses, essentially?
100%. The other thing as well, I think, regarding this, is that they are smart to delay the opening, because with an attraction like that, you need word of mouth to carry it.
Yeah.
You can't look at external pictures. You can't look at a POV to carry that attractions in terms of viral marketing and things like that. You need to have that push from people going, you have to experience this firsthand.
And I feel the rest of the land is kind of designed more to sell it than the attractions. Like, even if all the advertising and, you know, that video with Miyamoto and stuff like that, that was all focused on the land, not the attractions. And it seems that the biggest sell for the land is, it looks like you're in Mario.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like, and I think that's pretty much what they're going
for. But it looks like you're in Mario. You can punch a block. You can, you know, fight a piranha plant. You're in Mario.
I think it'll be very similar to when you, like, I'm doing a lot of parallels between Avatar and Super Nintendo World, because they are,
something
at the end of the day, very similar.
So, I'm just trusting your judgment on this.
Because when you go into the world of Avatar, Pandora at Animal Kingdom, you are just completely surrounded by this fake, you know, landscaping and flora and fauna and all of that. Very similar thing to what they're doing with Mario. And one of the things that I find a lot of people do, they will walk in, they'll look around at Pandora and go, wow, neat. Then they'll look at the ride times and go, 3 hours, no thanks, and walk straight back out.
I sent it to you today.
It's the appeal.
15 minutes for Flight of Passage today. 15 minutes. And that was in the middle of the day.
15 minutes when we were there, I would have been doing that like it was a damn Space Mountain at the Magic Kingdom at 2 a.m.
Have you heard as well? It's a bit of a tangent, and we're quickly going back to the U.S., but I think Walt Disney World is quietly, what's a polite way to say it, but is petrified that between now and the 50th, nobody's going to come.
Booping
because
themselves,
they keep
Luke,
putting out stuff that themselves. Are like, yeah, they keep putting out like special, you know, ticket prices and special this and special that and special events and all of this, this and this. And they all seem to conveniently run until the 25th of September. From now, which to me is going, uh-oh, please come, don't wait, because we've lost a lot of money over the last year, and we don't really want to do it for another 9 months.
Think about it from the perspective of just a regular family in the US right now, within the last month as well. Why Why would you plan a trip to Walt Disney World this year when at the end of the year and next year, when the vaccine's more rolled out and everything is, you know, further developed in terms of COVID-19 response, why would you go to Walt Disney World at the moment? I almost feel that Disney are in a position now where their stocks aren't tanking and they've got more of a backup plan with Disney Plus, where they're sort of like, oh, I kind of wish that we could close Walt Disney World so that they could save that money.
No, I would say Walt Disney World is breaking even. Remember, it's not free to keep a theme park closed. It's not free. You had to pay people, sure, but when you lay off 30,000 workers, that's 30,000 less people you have to pay. Over the Christmas and New Year, you have to remember, over the last few months, Walt Disney World has pretty much been selling out of those daily attendance caps at a majority of the big parks. If they couldn't realistically make a profit or close enough to it at that 25-35% capacity, they wouldn't be open. If they were losing money to be open, they would be closed. The fact that they're fighting so hard to get Disneyland open isn't because they want to open it and lose more money. Let's just say that.
Yeah, true. No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And I feel like their fight to get Disneyland back opened has sort of diminished a bit, except for the news in the last week where they're like, we're reopening Disneyland as a COVID vaccination point.
Come on and in, guys. Sort of, quick one. You get your vaccine on which ride? Which ride do you pick?
Tower of Terror.
Galaxy. When you hit the bottom, it just like it goes into a needle and throws you back out the top.
Space Mountain would be good as well because you could just have people at like the sides just like swinging at you and you'd never know. I don't have a problem with needles. I am one of the people, and yeah, a lot of people have asked me, they're like, what is your stance on the vaccination? Me, I like, it's like a new iPhone for me. I'll be camping out the front the day before to get one. Like, I don't know why. I feel it's the least I can do to help try and fix this international problem.
Yeah.
It's like the easiest thing I can do is just get vaccinated and continue working and continue going on with my life. Yep. And yeah, I don't know. That's my stance. I know some people have differences in terms of long-term effects and all of that, but not a discussion for today, Luke. Yeah.
Let's say that the vaccine or whatever happens and all these open on time. So even though it's not going to open on time, Super Nintendo World hopefully will open up sometime this year. It is already open, as we were saying. To me, it looks like they're hoping for this to be the next Harry Potter for Universal. Those parks saw incredible success when Islands of Adventure introduced Harry Potter, and we've seen it all around the world. And it's pretty much gone to every resort. I think they're trying to get ahead of that. Like, it took a long time to go to every resort Harry Potter. So I feel they think Nintendo is going to be just as popular, which is why it's pretty much going to every resort from the get-go.
You know an odd thing I was thinking about the other day? Why is it? So Disney was sort of taking the reins on the theme park industry for years. No one could keep up with them until Universal brought in Harry Potter. And you would think if Universal has been on the back foot for that many years, Harry Potter should have just put them up further, maybe in an equalizer position. But it's almost like Disney put themselves on the back foot to try and be like, oh, we need our next Harry Potter. We need to do what they're doing, and somehow forgot that everyone was following them. And it allowed an opportunity for Universal to literally step in and go, we're releasing a new attraction every year. We're releasing Harry Potter. Yeah. We're releasing Nintendo World. And Disney?
Yeah. Those every year attractions aren't all great. We're not going to sit here and say that this is the greatest attractions ever. But guess what? If one is a Fast and Furious Supercharge, it doesn't matter. Because in 12 months' time, you come back, there's going to be something new, which chances are will be good, like Hagrid's or the Velocicoaster or something. Like, if you just, I guess they're doing throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. But to me, I'm more excited to get back
Comcast money.
I'm more excited to get back to Universal Orlando than I am to get back to the Magic Kingdom or Epcot. The only two parks I'm excited at this stage to get back to at Walt Disney World is mostly Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom. The other two pretty much haven't changed in 10 years with anything major.
And surprisingly, even though you're excited for Hollywood Studios, the addition that you would be excited to experience, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, you've already experienced.
Well, not the attraction.
And then you've got Toy Story. Oh, you haven't experienced Rise of the Resistance.
I've got some friends who, for the first time, got to experience it today. And they are saying it is one of the greatest experiences, theme park-wise, in the world. And I'm hoping that that's the case. I still don't know pretty much anything about it. And this is from people who agree with me that, like, Spider-Man, Tower of Terror, and what else would we say? The top three. Spider-Man, Tower of Terror, and Indiana Jones are probably the best three.
On the Gold Coast.
Dark rides, I would say.
Mm.
And they're saying it's above those three. So who knows?
True.
Eventually we'll get to it.
Nobody argues that it's not the most spectacular theme park experience of all time. It's just, was it worth it? Did Disney take a gamble on this trying to be their Harry Potter and then realize that it wasn't their Harry Potter and we're seeing the effects of that? Maybe there's a video of that coming up from Dom in 2 weeks. Oh, let's find out.
Let's see.
If bloody Defunctland or anyone else, Yesterworld, if you're listening to this and you steal my idea, I'll come for you.
We'll quickly stay in Japan. There's one other thing that's coming to finish out the new Dreams Tokyo Disneyland New Fantasyland expansion, which is just a new indoor theater debuting with a show called Mickey's Magical Music World. I know you've seen the show that this is replacing, and I have to say, One Man's Dream 2, The Magic Lives On, is the weirdest theme park show I ever had the privilege to see. It used to be a Tokyo Disneyland. Tokyo Disneyland in like a Tomorrowland theater. It had nothing to do with Tomorrowland. It had a Bug's Life section where everyone was dressed as bugs. It had like you know that Into the Fire? Like it had a villain section to that song.
Yeah.
It had like...
And it had the world's most boring main theme, which is just One Man's Dream. It's like not even a big like, you know, Disney riff where it's like, you know, happiness is here or reach out and find your... It's just... One Man's Dream.
And it also is the classic where it'd be like, One Man's Dream in English, and then something, something Japanese, something like... And it happens a lot in Japanese shows where it's like the main part, you know, like think of Happiness is Here. All of those, the theme songs are always in English. And I do wonder for the guests who don't speak it, do they just like the tune? Do they just like... I guess it's catchy, like no matter what...
K-pop is very popular in Australia and not many Australians speak Korean.
Sing along with her. I'm sure that show will be great. I really love the entertainment at Tokyo. Like, even though that was the weirdest show we've ever seen, it was still entertaining. And the good thing is that theater, the Tomorrowland Theater, used to be outside. Mm. Didn't have AC. It was hot, especially in the summer. This new one's indoors, so it's all weather. It'll be like the Big Band Beat Theater, which is a good thing. In my eyes.
This follows the trend as well of internationally Mickey's Magical X, Y, and Z. I believe Hong Kong has Mickey's Magical Storybook.
No, it's Mickey and the Wonders Book.
Yeah.
Tokyo, and then Disneyland had Mickey and the Magical Map. Paris had Disney, Mickey and
wasn't
the Magician.
Wasn't it like Mickey and the Magician? Yeah.
Yeah, it's Mickey
and then this.
And something, something, something.
And so,
this one,
dude's on
Mickey's
a lot of adventures.
Magical Music World, which I'm guessing will be the same as every other Disney show, where it's just, hey, I'm Mickey, and Goofy and Donald are here too. Here's some Frozen. Here's some Tangled. Here's something else. Okay, thanks, guys.
It is pretty much along the lines of, hello, it is I, Mickey Mouse. Now I will interact with magical object. Oh, one of us is now trapped inside magical object.
How do
we
get
better get
out?
It out. But we jump inside and go through the world of Disney. There we are. Yeah. Just Mickey and the magical... Bucket.
Kevin Rafferty just got just stood down from Imagineering, one of the main writers at Imagineering. If you need a review time special, we can write any of the Mickey and the XYZ shows for you.
Hey, Bob Chapek. I know you're there.
I know you're listening.
I know you're listening. We're cheap. We're just two Australian guys. We'll come up there and we'll show you what for in
We'll work from home for a little while, though, until we figure out what is going on in the US right now. Look, let's work from home. Stay safe wherever you are over there the next couple of weeks. It's getting crazy. But let's stay in Japan where things are getting crazy. Crazy all over the world right now. I know you want to talk about this. So what is your most exciting thing coming to Japan next year? This year. It's not at Tokyo Disney. It's not Universal Studios Japan. What is it?
It is at a certain big mountain in Japan.
Oh, no, wow. Mount Kosciuszko Amusement Park.
Mount Kosciuszko is
that's
Australia,
the only mountain I can think of, and it's in Australia, but
it's not even that big.
It's Australia's biggest mountain.
Isn't it like only 800 meters?
It's an ant mound when you compare it to the big mountains of the world. But hey, it's Australia's biggest mountain. Let's have some respect.
Look, we pump snow onto that for 6 months of the year.
Like, you want to pay $5,000.
It doesn't make enough
to go into the snow and not be able to do anything because it's not real snow. Come to Mount Kosciuszko, folks.
That is the only reason why we have the, I think it's called the Anzac Treaty, where it's like, we can go to New Zealand without any sort of visa or anything.
Passport,
we can literally just stroll on in.
Wait, don't you not need a passport anymore?
I don't think so. I think you just need ID.
Yeah, you just need like an ID, like a domestic flight.
Fun fact, in our constitution, if you look it up, New Zealand is actually specified as a state of Australia.
Yeah.
The only reason why they
ever
did that.
Join us.
Yeah, it was done as a thing where they're like, hey, you can come and be part of Australia. But to be fair, Australia wants to be a part of Australia.
Yeah,
Western Australia has been trying to get away for years. Mainly because they'd all be gazillionaires.
But it's not Mount Kosciuszko. Mount Everest, what is it?
It is Fuji Q Highland. They are installing
Mount Fuji, of course.
Get this, Luke. Are you sitting down? I'm not, because I always stand up for these. It's my only exercise for the week.
So I have to sit, and I'm getting very sweaty because it's summer in Australia.
And we can't use fans because they're too loud.
This is for you, listeners.
But at Fujiyama... at Fuji Q Highland, they are installing Fujiyama King of Coasters Tower.
Which this is the most
not
Japanese
a new
name for an attraction of all time. Fujiyama, which is the name of a coaster. King of Coasters, which is the tagline for the coaster. So Fujiyama King of Coasters is already a thing. But this is Fujiyama King of Coasters Tower. What is Fujiyama King of Coasters Tower?
So it has three elements. It's expected to open up in summer of 2021, and it has an observatory, arguably possibly one of the best views of Mount Fuji, if it's a clear day. Like, looking at that view, it is just straight out.
The lift hill was essentially facing Mount Fuji. So on the climb, you just got this beautiful panoramic view of Mount Fuji.
That was pretty much the appeal of Fujiyama, King of Coasters, was that as you went around, like you would go up the lift hill and then it goes into a flat section where it turns around and goes back. Like, imagine your typical roller coaster tycoon roller coaster. But what they've done is in this U-turn on the coaster, so it turns around 180 degrees, during that dead space, they're attaching a tower in that area. So you'll see the coaster going around you, but then you've got a tower. But they don't just have an observatory. Mm. They also have a skywalk. So this is similar to what was installed at Shanghai Disneyland, which is like the high ropes course. But this is going to be around the outside of this tower, giving
you
views.
Isn't it mostly just a walkway, but it has like a glass floor? So you've got you've got like the high ropes harness and everything, but it's literally
so it's nothing
down.
Like Shanghai Disney's high ropes course.
So take out the theming, take out the obstacles, but keep the harness, and that's pretty much what you've got.
Keep the wedgie, and it's very
Ooh, the best
similar.
Part.
And then we've got what is arguably the weirdest addition, a tube slide down to the bottom.
This is the best addition. I don't care what you say. This sounds like the greatest part. A giant slide. And this is very strange. This, though, might be the most Fuji Q Highland thing I've ever heard of. Fuji Q Highland, to me, just seems like the park that's like, okay, let's do this. Why? Well, because nobody else has done it. Why wouldn't we do it? Let's make any coaster.
Why?
Will it really hurt you? Yeah, probably. But hey, when nobody else has done it, there's probably a reason, but hey, we'll do it. And this is an 80 meter tall platform, which means this is an 80 meter tall tube slide. It's wild.
It would have to go down as possibly, I'm not sure of the stats here, but that seems like a pretty tall tube slide. They have some like big ones on cruise ships. That's about
it. You're going to have to either, the slope going down is going to have to be so gradual that one of two things going to happen. You're going to get dizzy because it's going to have to wrap around the tower about 500 times before it gets to the ground. Or they're going to need the biggest crash mat at the bottom and the biggest runoff for a slide that's ever existed. I don't know what either of those two is going to be, but I can't wait to eventually ride Fujiyama King of Coasters Tower tube type slider.
It is going to be a journey. Have we finished off Japan? Is that everything?
We're done. I'm sure there's other stuff coming, and we'll quickly touch on it. There's obviously stuff coming to these countries and these areas and the world of theme parks that we just don't have time to talk about. Most of the stuff that we're talking about is because we've either been to the park, so we know what sort of thing it's going to add. The only park of these we haven't been to is Fuji Q Highland. We're only talking about it because
we were this close to going there.
So we'll count it.
Well, I think we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll just finish off Asia.
Yep.
And then we'll talk about some Australian additions coming as well.
Ooh.
And we are back. We don't have a huge amount left to talk about in terms of Asia. Well, actually, we do because it's two huge full things, theme parks. But, but in terms of like what we know is coming
to them this year or anytime soon. So well, maybe in a couple of years to come. Who knows?
It's very speculative as well at this stage. There's a lot of like some things are mostly announced, but others are a little bit under the seal, locked away in the time capsule, ready to come out.
And one of them,
whenever
there's a video, if you're interested in, I will quickly talk about Universal Studios Beijing. That is meant to open sometime this year. But if you're interested, you can go and watch Review Time's video of it from sometime last year, because even though most of it hadn't been officially announced, we pretty much got everything right. So
yeah, you went through and you're like, this looks like this, this looks like that. Yeah. And then like almost all of it, like 90% is spot on.
I think
on.
I got one thing wrong, and it was the name of the roller coaster in Transformers Land. I called it like the Destructicoaster and it's called like the Decepticoaster or something like that.
Yeah.
But pretty much
you
every
were
other
this close.
Thing is right. Which,
but unfortunately, that does make you the weakest link, so we will have to terminate your contract.
We're only allowed one mistake on the channel, so that's mine. See you guys.
And I've never made any sweating bullets.
Yeah, we've made it 3 years with one mistake. But that park looks pretty good, in my opinion. It has the stuff you'd expect, so it has the Transformers area. It has Despicable Me. The only things that look new and it has Harry Potter, of course. There's a Kung Fu Panda Land, which is indoors. Seems to be everything's a completely original attraction. Has a boat ride, which looks pretty cool. And then to me, the most exciting is the Jurassic World section, which has like a Mac family powered inverted coaster, as well as a Jurassic World version of the Spider-Man dark ride. And we've seen some like sets and animatronics and stuff like that, and that ride looks really cool, which is probably going to be, you know, the ride of the park that people talk about.
Yeah, it's one of those things where they've sort of done it strategically. They have the stuff that Universal is known for, which makes sense because China's a big place with a lot of people, so it makes sense to put your top sellers in this park to try and get that booming middle class that's emerging in China. But there's nothing particularly outside of the Jurassic World dark ride that makes me go, I have to visit this. In a similar sense to Shanghai, there's a couple of really cool things, but it's like, I'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
But it's nothing that makes me go, I have to be on the first plane there to experience these attractions. I'm not sure if you're the same, but that's just sort of my stance on it at the moment.
Yeah. I've pretty much, having been to most of the Universal parks, I've experienced most of these rides anyway, apart from it. And the shame is it's like, oh, they've got the Transformers ride. But I don't like the Transformers ride compared to the Spider-Man ride. Oh, they've got, you know, a coaster. Oh, it's a Transformers coaster. Oh, it's just the Incredible Hulk coaster with a different theme. Mm. Like, unless this Jurassic World dark ride is, okay, this is better than Spider-Man. Yeah, I'm not in a huge rush to get there. But I'll get there eventually. I'm sure we'll probably do Shanghai and Beijing at one stage. We'll probably now do them together. We'll do Disney and this, who knows when, but eventually I'll get there.
At some point.
But at a park that we were going to go to, we didn't know when and we still don't. We were going to try to get to the opening of this park, if you remember. This was like two years ago we had this discussion because it's been meant to have opened for like 4 years at this stage. Hopefully it should open this year. That is the Genting Sky Worlds in Malaysia, which was the 20th Century Fox World Malaysia. One day there'll be a 40-minute video on the history of this park because it has been wild.
I remember us discussing this because we've always wanted to go to either the opening of a park or the opening of an attraction. And we were like, oh, this is planning to open in mid-2020. And we were like, we're planning on doing a lot of traveling in 2020. What if we just pick a time to sort of do it as a stopover?
We were going to do it as a weekend. Because Singapore's not, it's like a 7-8 hour flight. We were going to, you know, do Singapore, a 4 or 5 day weekend, Universal Studios Singapore, and the opening of this Genting Sky World in Malaysia when it was still 20th Century Fox World Malaysia. And then our good friends, the Walt Disney Company, came, bought out Fox, and essentially created a huge legal proceeding where both sides were like, I'm suing you for this. Well, yeah, I'm going to sue you for this.
It's
and now we don't know what the park's going to open with.
Like, it's such a bizarre situation because you think that if you were a theme park operator and you've just had the opportunity to interact directly with Disney, why would you sue them?
No,
though
Disney
I think it was the other way
first.
Around.
So Disney sued them, and then they went, no, well, we're suing you. And there's a lot behind it. It's like Disney's like, oh, you're not using our IPs correctly. And then Fox was like, you're not letting us use your IPs correctly. You're specifically not allowing us access to these, you know, designers and illustrators and stuff like that. So we can't use it like this sort of stuff. They came to an agreement. So there is going to be Fox properties as part of the park, but we don't know what specific ones there will or won't be, what rides had to be rethemed and stuff like that. It's meant to still contain attractions from the franchise Rio, which is that bird one that no one remembers with the blue,
the bird one,
the blue macaws, which was, where they're like the two last blue birds in the world or something.
You know, the saddest thing about that film is that it came out in protest of like poaching and stealing wildlife and all of that. And the success of that film caused more blue macaws to actually be captured. And it actually did recordable harm, like the effects of before and after Rio came out. It did more harm. And
I think it did effects on my enjoyment of watching movies as well, because I don't remember much about it, so I don't know if that says much for the quality of the film. Apparently, there's going to be a Night at the Museum dark ride, as well as an Alien coaster, but it's one of those new SFX coasters by Dynamic Attractions, which have tilt tracks and all these cool, exciting things. That's not meant to open to phase two, so even when it opens, it's not going to fully open. Fingers crossed it will open this year. Fingers crossed even more so. We might be able to get out there if it's way later in the year and something positive happens between now and then with borders and all of that. But a few things we don't need to worry about the borders for. Do we want to jump to Oz?
Yeah, let's jump into Australia. We'll move our way out of the great Asian continent and move our way over to our home. Huh. So some of the incredible things, like 2021 is shaping up to be an incredible year for theme parks in Australia, right?
I think it might be the best year to be a theme park enthusiast in Australia. I've been on this planet for 28 years. I've probably been a theme park enthusiast for 27 years and 11 months.
You came out of the womb and you're like, where's Galaxy's Edge, mother?
come on, take me on the Haunted Mansion. And then... I'm a suave baby. Hey, baby.
Hello, mother. It is I, Luke Carroll. I must go to theme park.
Mickey Mouse.
Give me book, mother.
I need
mother.
To review my thoughts on local attractions.
And then I just pop out of nowhere and I'm like,
hello, Luke. It is me, baby Dom.
No, we remember we were the same person until about 16 when we got separated into two distinct people and slightly went different ways.
One of us got bald, the other grew a beard. Wait, this no. Is,
what?
One of them shaved off.
Never mind. Anyway, I think this is the most exciting year to be an enthusiast in Australia. I've been an enthusiast in Australia for, as I was saying, 27 years, 11 months. And this is the year to me. There's pretty much... so much is coming. Where should we start?
Okay, let's just point out. So one of the things with being an enthusiast in Australia is that most of that enthusiasm gravitates around the state of Queensland and the area of the Gold Coast where all of these theme parks are located. I think just because this is where a lot of theme parks developed over time, that's what's become the theme park capital of Australia, just sort of naturally.
Yeah.
But because we live 8 hours away from the Gold Coast, it's always been that problem of we can't really do things until we manage to find a time to get up and experience things.
I remember maybe as this a year kid. I don't know if it was the same for you, but it was like maybe once every like 5 to 7 years, you'd get the chance to go to the Gold Coast as a kid. And it was incredibly exciting.
Mm.
But now it's like, we're lucky enough if something major is going on or has changed. Like when we went up for the parks reopening after the COVID-19 shutdowns, we were lucky enough to be able to travel because of review time. But I remember growing up, that was the outlet, you know. It might be, you might get to go overseas every, you know, once every 8 to 10 years and go to a theme park, but that was kind of your little midway point. Every 5 years or so, you'd get to go to the Gold Coast and see what had changed, what was new.
It's like that little chocolate you get before eating a meal at a wedding, because it's nowhere near going to fill you up. You still are hungry. You still have a desire, but it's going to get you through.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of people that don't know, Australian theme parks are nothing like the rural theme parks you expect to find in America. Like,
it blows my
our
mind.
Our top theme parks are nowhere near the top theme parks of any other country around the world.
Australia has a very weak theme park scene, unfortunately. A lot of people might give us flack for that, especially people who aren't lucky enough to have experienced much outside of Australia. But it is a real shame to see. And there was a stage where Australia was a contender in the world. We had things like the Giant Drop. We had things like Tower of Terror for a while there that were world leaders. The tallest drop ride in the world, the tallest roller coaster in the world. And kind of since then, even not just saying, you know, you have to be a record breaker to stick it up there with the big boys, But bad decision after bad decision has unfortunately been made in Australian theme parks over the last, I would say, 10 years at least. And they've resulted in weaker parks than I remember growing up with. And it's a shame for people who are growing up. It's hard to foster that enthusiast community nowadays, today, especially when you've got the thing where we do it as well. You go to some other theme park and then you come back to Australian theme parks and it makes you really sad. It makes you just want to spend more money to go overseas.
The thing I want to point out as well regarding it, I want to sort of lump, this is mostly the Gold Coast theme parks. And this isn't anyone in particular. They're all sort of guilty of it at the moment. But there is a great emerging scene around Melbourne. There's a great emerging scene north of the Gold Coast. And there's a, Adventure World over in Perth is doing fantastically. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's just that thing where comparing...
They've got comfortable the is parks. My worry, the Gold Coast theme parks. The Gold Coast is known.
It's just...
If you want to go to theme parks in Australia, you go to the Gold Coast. The Gold Coast has been riding off that for 20 plus years at this point, but they haven't kept up with what made it in the first place, the theme park capital of Australia. And it will get to a stage, as Luna Park Sydney we'll talk about in a bit, as these parks in Melbourne, Perth, get bigger and better, they're going to start taking the guests from the Gold Coast. Like, if it comes to a stage, if you're from Victoria and you go, well, why would I go to the Gold Coast when they've taken more attractions away in the last 5 years than they've added, when I can drive an hour from Melbourne and have three great, sure, they're not, the world's greatest theme parks, but they're trying. They've got a really great atmosphere and they're constantly expanding and getting better and better and better. Why spend 10 times as much money to go to the Gold Coast?
I will just say as well, like, one of the reasons why we bring this up is that this year has an opportunity to turn that around. Both Dreamworld and SeaWorld, which are both lacking in new additions at the moment,
probably are about the weakest two parks. There's three major parks of the Gold Coast, if you don't know. We've got Warner Brothers Movie World, which has become Warner Brothers DC World, where we chuck in good, thrilling rides with very little theme.
We've got Six Flags Gold Coast.
Yeah, Six Flags Gold. Dreamworld, which in the last 5 years has going down a really
Luna
disappointing
Park,
path.
Gold Coast.
Yeah. And then we've got SeaWorld, not related to SeaWorld in the US, but pretty much forgot for a while there that they actually were a theme park and just kept
Sunshine Coast
out
National
rides
Park.
And just, yeah. And I would say Movie World's the strongest at the moment, but it's not perfect. It has ways to go. It's currently, they've officially announced it, but there was a ride sitting there closed for a year that they knew was closed for a year. They never officially announced
months.
It. Yeah. it's officially closed now. If we'll ever get a replacement, who knows? But both SeaWorld and Dreamworld are getting new attractions. Whilst I don't think they're going to fix the inherent issues with those two parks, they're a step in the right direction. Hopefully they're the beginning, not the end.
Yeah. And what's coming is at SeaWorld, we've got New Atlantis, which is essentially a whole new, what they call a precinct, we call a land.
I think land area is being too nice. To say themed land is being too positive towards this expansion. Precinct might be the right word, and I've never said that. They've gone down the classic generic theming route where it's like, give the land an exciting sounding name and just chuck, five or six pieces of theming in. Trident, which is just recent, Vortex, they've just recently opened a Huss Top Spin, has some elements that I'm like, that looks nice.
Yeah.
And then you look at something else and you're like, Like it's
the thing that's going for it is that it's basically a color scheme with some statues and foliage. The thing that concerns me is that if you look in the original concept art, they had this really lush sort of like it was going to be the world of Atlantis had risen up from the sea and you were experiencing
which is a good idea
their
for
world.
A themed land in a park like that.
Great idea. The thing that you can do there is that you can have heaps of foliage that's really dense and you see like a pillar or a statue that's submerged in the ground. It gives you this sort of context to the area. But basically what they've just gone for is modern, like just modern fixtures. It's kind of like the estate home of theme park editions. It's just cookie cutter, placed down. It doesn't have the character that you expect. And look, we are judging something that's not out yet. We have to take
Vortex
this all with a grain
out.
Of salt.
The hostel Vortex spin is out. It worries us, let's just say, that if that's the effort they're going to, it worries us what the next two. So they're going to be Trident, which is a star flyer. So just a big chair swing, essentially. They're fun rides. Gives you a nice view. SeaWorld's in a really good spot, so it's going to give you a really nice view.
Yeah.
And then the other one is, Leviathan? Like wooden family coaster, essentially.
Like a 50-meter, 60-meter?
Yeah. No, not family 60. Coaster. 60 meters? Like that's 40? DC Rivals.
Oh, true.
I think it's like 30 or 40.
It's going to be decent. The thing I want to say about this is that even though, like, this is not Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, this is not going to be something that will necessarily revolutionize the theme park industry like was originally expected, it is a welcome addition still because SeaWorld needs more attractions. Pretty much, it is that thing where I am still excited for this, mainly because it adds to SeaWorld. And SeaWorld has been that park that every time I keep going back there, seem to be taking more and more out. And I'm like,
and nothing to replace
come on.
It. Yeah.
Which and is, I feel like we're being really negative.
Three attractions going in is pretty much how many attractions they've removed, but over like the last 6 or 7 years. Like, they're just getting to replace some of the attractions they closed, 7 years ago.
The fact that the only consistent rides that I get to experience when I go to SeaWorld, and this is no joke, the rides that I do every time I go there are Storm Coaster and the High Ropes course.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that's it. There's a really fun ride there that I really like, Jet Rescue. It's like a jet ski themed roller coaster. It's probably one of the best coasters on the Gold Coast for like what it is. It's never open. The last 4 times I've been to the Gold Coast, all at different times of the year, it's always closed.
I have been going to the Gold Coast since we started Review Time. I've been going there consistently for the last 3 years. At different times. There was a time in September, there was a time in June, there was another time that was in January. The last time I rode Jet Rescue was in 2014.
Yeah,
like, I think that goes to show the reliability of that attraction.
Yep.
SeaWorld is in desperate need of attractions.
Hopefully these new ones are going to be reliable.
Yeah.
If nothing
the
else.
The other theme park up on the Gold Coast that is also in need of just a killer e-ticket attraction.
SeaWorld's closed
something.
A lot of rides without replacement. DreamWorld's closed twice as many. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
I don't want to be an angry get up on my soapbox. We gave DreamWorld a really good review. We gave DreamWorld a
arguably
review that put them at the best theme park in Australia. And since we gave them that review, they seem to be rubbing our nose in it by doing some really silly, dumb decisions.
They took our review and essentially went, oh, cool, we're validated. Now just completely end the park.
If we were to re-review it, it'd be getting a lot. Obviously, we wouldn't be reviewing a park in COVID situations anyway, because a lot of parks have closures that aren't expected. It's not fair on the park. But if a lot of the closures that they've done recently do turn out to be permanent, their next review isn't going to be pretty, shall we say, compared to what their last one was.
And the thing I want to say as well, I don't, like, a lot of this sounds like us ragging on these theme parks. This is not from a place of us expecting more than our Australian theme park should be. We know our industry is a lot smaller than the rest of the world. The complications arise from the fact of just odd decisions that don't necessarily make sense to us, having this exposure of the worldwide theme park industry and then looking at the decisions that are taking place in Australia, we are just providing what we feel is valid criticism towards these because we want them to be the best that they can be.
I don't know if we've ever talked about this specifically on the podcast, but is it Efteling? In the Netherlands,
Efteling, yeah,
gets the same number of guests per year as Movie World.
No, Fantasialand. We haven't talked about this.
Yeah. Yet they're putting in every year these big new expansions. They've just put in the new Rookburg area with the new next generation flying coaster. They've put in Taran. They've put in all this exciting stuff. They get the same amount of visitors as Movie World, which, you know, gets all this praise because in 2017, 4 years ago, they put in what is a world-class coaster, but it has none of the theming. It has none of the anything that Fantasialand is putting in to all of their new expansions, of which a lot of them include, like Taran, is held in just as high, if not a higher regard than DC rivals. They don't have an excuse in my mind anymore.
I'm just going to throw it out there. I am going to continue calling it Fantasialand because when I did my Hong Kong exchange, I lived in Hong Kong for 6 months. One of the guys who I was really close with then was a guy who lived 15 minutes from Fantasialand, and I always called it that, and he never corrected me. So
I don't know. I might be wrong.
I'm taking it in my stride. I could very much be wrong, and I'm happy to take that criticism.
Well, one of us is going to be right. One of us is going to be wrong. And as we said earlier in the show, that means one of us is getting fired. I'm already fired, so if it's me, who cares? I'm just
That's
double
it. By
fired.
The end of this, the review time's done. But I
enjoy
just,
our 20th and final episode of the cast. But quickly, back to Dreamworld.
So with Dreamworld, they're adding a brand new Mac Blue Fire mega coaster. This, I feel, is going to completely change the mood in terms of the attractions within Dreamworld, because I don't mean to say this in a bad way, but Dreamworld has a very dated feeling. You go in there and there's nothing necessarily that screams, I have to go to this park.
No.
One of the best additions of Dreamworld at the moment is that the water park next door is free. So you can just walk on in there as part of your ticket
for
Dreamworld.
And that is probably the best water park in Australia, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and sorry, I think one of the reasons we reviewed it so well is because of that. The water, if you're going to have a good, probably a better day at the moment in the water park than you would in the theme park.
The thing that has happened recently with Dreamworld that has made it very iffy in our eyes, and the reason why we're probably so critical towards it is because they have a whole back section of the park, which is essentially dedicated to not just Australian wildlife and nature, but also the original, you know, the first people of Australia,
the indigenous
Aboriginal people. And what they've done is they've just gone, well, there's no point in keeping that in at the moment because of COVID. And they've just sectioned off the whole back of the park.
Yeah.
Not only does that make it an incredibly small park and completely defeats the purpose of their multi-million dollar marketing campaign, which was to say that they were Australia's biggest theme park, it also creates the problem of that now it's just an okay theme park. It is not an experience like it used to be where you could go and chill out.
Yeah. The reason we gave it such a high mark, which we did, was because it had a bit of everything. It had, sure, it wasn't the best rides in Australia, but it had a good collection of thrill rides and family rides. But the experience was great. It had that corroboree area where you could meet native animals. You could hug a koala. You could feed a kangaroo. You could do all of these. And it had a water park. It had tigers. It had all of these things. And it was the full package. Whilst each individual component may have been better somewhere else in Australian theme parks, the full package component of Dreamworld made it, at the time, in our eyes, Australia's best theme park.
Yeah.
We can't say that anymore.
This was also, like, this was one of our hardest reviews because we're like, do we make this call? This is a tough call to make. I do still believe, at the time that we released that review, we made the right call. It was Australia's best. It was just the full rounded theme park experience. The way I say it, if you were coming to Australia for one day and could experience one theme park that would give you a taste of everything, Dreamworld was the way to go. Ever since then, they've closed down a lot and it's completely changed. It is incredible how dramatic that change has been within such a short time frame.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we sound a bit shook by all of this. Like, our tone has almost dramatically changed because we're like, what is happening? Like, Gold Coast is just doing its own thing. But down south,
it's because we want better things. We're not here to just rag on, you know, Dreamworld or rag on Village Roadshow theme parks. We know they can do better. They've done better in the past. They've made decisions, some of them in recent times, that show that they still know how to make good decisions. We don't want to lose theme parks in Australia. We want them to be the best they can be so they can continue to grow. In the same way, if we have children, we were brought up with them, we would like to be able to bring our children up with them and keep them going. We don't want it to get to a stage where it says, oh, you want to go to a theme park in Australia? Okay, we'll save up for 6 years and then you can go to Disneyland in Anaheim and that's it. Like,
the big thing,
that's the worst case scenario.
The big thing I say for all additions coming up to the Gold Coast is the people behind these attractions and who are implementing them and the decisions that they're making, they're often touted as being world class. I just want them to legitimately look at their additions on the world scale and just say, am I doing the absolute best that I can do with what we have? And
we have this.
We have this
argument. Well, not really an argument. We have this discussion with other people in the Australian theme park industry a fair bit of whether this whole world class tagline monkey that they like to use is a thing that they should be using. The one that gets me is for SeaWorld, newest wooden roller coaster. They're billing it as the world's greatest family coaster. It's not going
I'm
to
stop
be
you the, right there.
It's not going to be the better than Expedition Everest, better than Space Mountain, better than Big Thunder Mountain. Wow, this is going to be great. But then when people have experienced those attractions, which a lot of Australians have, Disney parks on their bucket list for families and stuff like that. When they go and experience it, they're going to feel disheartened and lied to, in my opinion.
One of the best things that ever came out of Game of Thrones, and there weren't many things, was essentially the line that was, the king should never have to yell out that he's the king.
Yeah.
And if you think about that, it bodes for
Australia.
Does Disney
Australia. Ever say, you know, come on down, Hollywood Studios, the greatest movie park in the world, you know?
Mm.
And well, especially for
Disney,
attractions that aren't.
Like, I know we're essentially comparing apples to cucumbers because they're
apples
just they're completely different things for completely different purposes. But Disney will never come out and their advertising campaign is just, all right, here's Galaxy's Edge. Here's why it's the best attraction ever. They don't
no,
do
no,
that.
Don't even say just say that it is the best attraction ever. Just say, Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run, the world's greatest attraction. Why?
And that's it.
That's it. You don't need to ask
Whereas
me why.
They come out and they will be like, Smuggler's Run. It is an interactive journey where you venture through the world of Star Wars, creating your own outcomes through your input in the attraction. That, for me, makes me far more excited than if they just say, this is the world's greatest attraction.
Yeah.
Or a world-class attraction.
And
in that sense, you can then just turn around and say, this is Australia's only wooden roller coaster. It goes this speed. It does all of that. Come and experience it. Don't just tell me that it's good because that doesn't achieve anything. Convince me that it's good.
Wow. Yeah. Australia's only wooden coaster. Jeez. Can you believe this guy, folks? It's not. But let's talk let's talk about something that will be Australia's and the world's only. Let's head down south. We have bickered and moaned about the Gold Coast theme parks for about 30 minutes at this stage.
We promise. I just want to quickly point out here, we will not have that argument again until 2022. Because we do not want to beat a dead horse.
Next week's episode, bickering about the Gold Coast theme parks, special edition. Let's go down. We're going to go down south. We're going to go to what I guess is the closest thing we have to a home park. I live, you know, 20 minutes away. You live an hour and a half away from Luna Park, Sydney.
And that's this my home park.
Woohoo! This year, they've looked at what the Gold Coast is doing and they've gone, that's it? That's all you've got? Oh, by the way, so we're going to close in January. And when we open in June, when we reopen in June, 9 brand new attractions, guys. 9 brand new attractions. 6 months, 9 brand new rides.
I saw that email. The first thing I got was I was just scrolling through my emails. And I don't usually go through the, like, you know how Google Chrome has the three sections the and it's like the promotions tab. I just looked at it for some reason and I had an email from 5 minutes ago and I just scrolled past and I was like, hold up. And I go back and I'm just like, that doesn't seem right. And it just said Luna Park, Sydney, 9 new attractions coming 2021. I'm like, oh, what are they? And I click on it. And it's like, we're going to be adding 3 coasters. We're going to be adding 2 kiddie rides, 3 thrill rides. And it's just like, what the hell is going on?
Hey, SeaWorld, take your new Atlantis. We'll show you where to put
it. Hey, you're releasing 3 attractions. We're going to release 3 times that.
You're releasing 3 attractions over 4 years? Nah. How about 9 in 3 in 6 months?
There was that amazing video that came out when the PlayStation 3 first came out and they were super low on stock everywhere. And this guy released this video. He was from like a tech company that had 3 PlayStation 3s. And he's like, you may only have 1 PlayStation 3, but we have 3 PlayStation 3. And then this is essentially what Luna Park has done. They're like, you may only have 3 new additions. But our literal boardwalk theme park in a block of land smaller than probably a studio apartment in Sydney has 9 new attractions. And the thing I love about this, and I just want to quickly say, because everyone's like, oh, you guys must be so negative towards Australian theme parks. No, no, no. This really excites me because what they did, and Luna Park did this spectacularly, they assessed what was necessary for them to make the best version of their theme park. Instead of going, how can we essentially toot our own horn? They've just gone, let's make this the best possible theme park for us. And that, for me, that shows essentially integrity to itself.
They know what they are. They know what the park needs. Let's have a quick chat about what's coming. We'll start with the more boring things. They've got like 6 new, just, you know, five or 6 new kiddie off the shelf rides, which are fine. The park is replacing their older ones. So this is kind of a net neutral. It's not a positive or negative.
Because Luna Park, for context, will cycle through a lot of temporary attractions.
Yeah. They've also adding like a pendulum type ride. I'm not sure the exact style. It's going to be similar to like the Claw at Dreamworld. And then they've got 3 coasters. They've got a kiddie coaster, which is your traditional kind of up a tiny lift hill, go around 2 helix type things and back to the station. Then they've got a boomerang coaster, which like a family boomerang where they drag you to one end of the track. You go through it, and then you go back through it backwards. And then they have the, I'm going to say it, probably the only thing that's been announced in the last few years that you could realistically call world class.
He said it, guys.
The only one of them in the world, the world's first launched single rail roller coaster, as well as the first Intamin Hot Racer single rail coaster in the world. And this looks like the attraction for this park. This is the perfect
insanely
ride.
Insanely exciting. Like, the thing that just gets me is that this makes, like, I don't mean to say this in a bad sense, but this makes Luna Park worth going to for people who are essentially traveling nationally.
It was lacking its signature attraction. Like, it had, you know, a wild mouse that was on the water, and it had one of the only surviving versions of a 1920s classic funhouse in the world, but it was lacking the thing to draw people in the same way that back in the day, Tower of Terror or Giant Drop drew people into Dreamworld, in the same way that DC Rivals Hypercoaster draws people into Movie World. This, hopefully, will draw people into Luna Park Sydney. The park, they used to have like a humongous coaster that's now at Dreamworld, but it got removed in 1996. And since then, the park has lacked the big thing. And hopefully this is the big thing. It's close to us, so knowing us, we'll probably go and watch construction update just for ourselves, maybe for Instagram.
It's meant to open in like 160 days, which is just wild. That's less than half a year.
We'll probably be there opening day, I would say, if plans go ahead. Like, if everything
the
goes
thing
to fruition.
That I really want to point out regarding this is, for people who want to understand the context of the frustration behind enthusiasts to the Australian community, the things happening at the Gold Coast, compare the concept art of New Atlantis to the concept art of Luna Park Sydney's nine new rides. My expectations are set from the get-go when you have such bland-ass, boring concept art from Luna Park.
We're going to get the explicit E for this episode.
But it's just like, beep that out, just, or chuck in a whoop.
I don't think arts is a swear word, is it?
I don't think so. I think it's more in a, I'd say it's like an exclamation.
In Australia, that's a nothing word compared to some of the things we don't classify as swearing.
But the thing, like, you look at that concept art and you're like, this is just some new rides. They're not really doing anything major with theming or anything like that. And even, it just looks real janky as well. Like, if you look at the attractions, they like have no loading. They have no sections for like maintenance or any like side areas, for block sections and stuff like that. They don't even show the launch for the launch coaster. It's just like they went, all right, let's just pay a company to render this in whatever we have available. Whereas if you look at the original concept art for New Atlantis at the Gold Coast, there have been about three different concepts. There's the original concept that was like
every
Photoshop
time too, which is always a thing. We know that's what happens in theme parks, but it doesn't usually get this much worse.
There was a model that was made that
the night before, apparently, talking
that
to
was
some
just
people
wrong, like looking at what is now being released, it was just completely off. And then there was concept art. They have footage in their trailer for the Vortex attraction that is nothing like what is the actual
theming
attraction.
Yeah.
And this is released to promote the attraction. So it's just like this, if you look at the Vortex trailer, it's really lush. It's surrounded by palm trees and bushes. And it's got an observatory area where you can watch the attraction. The actual one that released is just an attraction on a small island with a little bit of blue fiberglass.
Do better. We know
fine.
You can. And we hope you can. Like, we love visiting theme parks. We wouldn't have literally dedicated years and years of our life to it, either working in them, you going to them as often as you could, and now 3 years spent on reviewing and talking about theme parks every single week if we didn't like theme parks. We love theme parks. We know they can do better. We want these to be the best parks that they can be. We're not saying this out of a place of hate. We're saying it out of a place of love.
This is an intervention. And on that, I think that's a good point to end off this episode.
Good timing, I feel.
Well, is there anything else that you want to say?
No, I think it's an exciting year. Who knows what's going on in the world? It looks like vaccines are rolling out. Australia, I think it's been pushed up a little bit till the end of Feb instead of March. So it's getting out there. It's rolling out around the world. It looks like it may be the end of the year till things start to look better. But wherever you are out there, stay safe, whatever you're doing. Hopefully we'll get to see you in a theme park sometime this year. If not, surely next year, right?
And if you can't find us in a theme park, you can find me at Review Time Dom on Twitter.
You can find me at Review Time Luke on Twitter.
And you can find both of us at Time Review, or you can get in contact with us at our email address. I'm dom@reviewtime.com and Luke is luke@reviewtime.com.
Who would have guessed it?
Anyway, that is it for Review Time's theme podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. We will be going back to our regular scheduled content next week.
I need to research something.
I really want to talk about the history of Luna Park, so I expect that within the next month from me.
And we'll find out together next week because I don't know what I'm doing. So stay tuned for a surprise.
Look, you got time. I'll give you that. Anyway, guys, we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
Review Time's theme podcast is brought to you by Luke Carroll and Dominic Lacey. We are edited gratefully by Luke Shacatano. A big shout out goes to our patrons, Jake Cool, James McRobert, Jeremy Kalfakis, Louis Najira, Peter Matthews, Ruben Mays, Luke Shacatano, Ray Dredge, John Madison, Michael Pinn, Janine Kerr, CG Lemonade, Tim Descenzo, Josie McDougall, Stephen Schwarzrock, Matt Sakal, Norman Lacey, Sincerely Mac, Bobby McDougall, and to you, the listener. The Review Time podcast will be back next week, and we promise not to complain about Australian theme parks anymore. Goodbye!